It's Helping Hand, weekly feature, airs statewide on HPR One stations every Friday afternoon, part of our afternoon drive broadcast of All Things Considered. And then it appears online at hawaiipublicradio.org. That's where all of our Helping Hand segments and resources are archived. Every week, Helping Hand puts a spotlight on an organization, a topic, or an event that offers assistance to the disabled and to others among the most vulnerable. Aloha, I'm Dave Lawrence. This week, we are learning about the Hawaii State Chapter of Children's Justice Centers. The five Children's Justice Centers, according to their website across the state, assisting with child abuse investigations, so it's really serious stuff. The CJCs are child-friendly facilities. It's a place where law enforcement, child protection, prosecution, mental health, medical, victim advocacy professionals all merge in an effort to support a child victim and to try to help that person heal and also hold offenders accountable. We're going to learn more about the invaluable services they offer and how we can try to help them in this mission with our very special guest, first time ever on Helping Hand, chapter coordinator for the Hawaii State Chapter of Children's Justice Centers, Carrie Ock. Aloha, and thank you so much for coming down today, Carrie.
Aloha, thank you.
It's a real thrill to be able to support you guys. First, before we hear about your mission, how about a little bit of background on the scourge of child abuse and neglect in the Aloha State in general terms? It's a topic that we cover somewhat frequently, but it's a really important one because I look at a child who's being hurt or hit. I think of Talia Williams. I mean, there's so many names that could come to mind if you live here and you think, wow, they're really vulnerable. Mm-hmm. They can barely even at some point figure out what to do to get assistance. So in terms of what's going on, how prevalent it is, some of the dynamics of the issue, lay out what we've got going on here in Hawaii.
Sure. So unfortunately, like you said, child abuse does occur everywhere. That includes Hawaii. I do have some national numbers, and in general, depending upon who you ask and how you ask the question, that's why some people might see some different statistics, different prevalence rates. Some people see 1 in 4, some people see 1 in 8. A lot of that is just kind of who's asking the question and how they ask it. But what I have found for children is that about 1 in 8, and that's about the same for boys and girls, will receive some kind of physical abuse over before they turn 18.
This is national.
That is national. When it turns to, when we start talking about sexual abuse, it starts to differentiate a little bit between the boys and the girls. So for girls, I have seen about 1 in 5, I know, would receive, and that would be like a contact sexual abuse where touching is involved. Then anywhere from 1 in 10 to 1 in 20 for boys. And I think that that variation for the boys is more a factor of perhaps how much harder it is for boys and young men to even talk about or to acknowledge that they've been a victim, even that much harder for boys than it is for girls.
Right. You're saying what I'm reading into that is the case number is probably higher and they're just more hesitant to report it, essentially.
Exactly. Yep. Yep. We found that. So for Hawaii, we do know, just in general, I'll say right off the bat, we know that child abuse is underreported in general. But the last numbers we have are from 2015 and into the child protection system. That's our county departments of child protection. Little over 3,600 cases were reported.
In what time period again?
That is the year of 2015.
So in 1 year, 3,600 cases?
Were reported. So those came in, those are concerns from people around the state that there's been some neglect, physical abuse, sexual
abuse.
Those
are number of reports or number of individual cases?
That is number of children. That
wow.
is unique.
3,600 individuals.
Yes. Yes.
That's very high. And I'm just going to assume, and it could be wrong, but that's probably not a spike year and that number could be. Because sometimes numbers do change. You're talking about like rhino poaching in 2007, there were only 15 animals. Now it's 1,500. So, it could be really different. So in terms of this, we have 3,600 for 1 year. Is that, do your studies bear out that it's approximately a similar figure?
Yes.
Usually?
It's been a relatively stable. Now, when we do see an increase in reports, I want to caution people, it doesn't necessarily mean that there's more abuse happening. Mm-hmm. It could actually be, what we want is for those reports to come in. We want people to speak up. So perhaps if there is an increase, could be, getting the word out.
People awareness.
Awareness being willing to speak up for children.
That makes sense. But these are still frightening statistics. Yeah. And we've had other organizations. So anyone who's listened to Helping Hand on a long-term basis has probably heard some of these very discouraging numbers before. Other statistics or prevalent issues before we move on to another topic? Don't want to broom that out of the way if there's more that you wanted to share.
You know, just one other thing I'll mention is that the most of the reports that are coming in are around neglect. And then the next one down would be physical abuse. So we find the sexual abuse reports are the least reported.
And all of it is really bad. I mean, neglect can be a really horrific thing, too. And somebody could suffer a wound that could have been generated through abuse or violence, could just be generated through kids hurting themselves. And then if it's not treated and neglected, that wound can become catastrophic, as it could if you're elderly. I mean, so anybody. I mean, neglect is a very powerful form of abuse in and of itself.
Yes, absolutely. Medical, dental neglect, things like that.
Yep, and we've heard some stories on the show that are just... gives you pause. So now explain the Children's Justice Centers. And this is, we have had Paul from Maui.
Yeah.
So I got the right, I can't think of his last name.
It's Paul Tonneson.
Tonneson, right, from Mass, from Boston. So we always, because I lived there for a long time, always love joking around with Paul when we're not talking about the very severe work that he does. But that's connected to you guys. That's all part of this.
Absolutely. So, yes, I did want to explain. There's kind of two prongs to this approach, to the Children's Justice Center approach. There's the CJCs, which we call the Justice Centers. Then there's the Friends of the CJCs, and that's what Paul is involved in. So each of our five CJCs has a corresponding Friends of that's attached to them, and that's a separate nonprofit group. So the CJCs are really front lines. When there's an allegation of child abuse, they're helping with what you described in the beginning. They're making sure kids are interviewed properly and in a child-appropriate, child-friendly manner. They're bringing the law enforcement together, child protection together, making sure kids get medical, mental health. And then the Friends part, they are able to raise additional funds, and they like to approach their work as a way of helping the child regain a sense of normalcy in their lives. So they're on the end of, you know, perhaps a child is interested in art, making sure they're getting into that art class, helping with school supplies, helping support the normalcy of their child and returning their childhood, returning back to that.
And getting them funds for procedures that aren't covered by insurance and stuff, from some of Paul's examples of of some of the stuff that could come up from being neglected or abused, and then certain things just don't meet the criteria for funding, even though they'd be beneficial from the child. And so there are times that the Friends of the Children's Justice Center will step up to help make sure that that happens.
Exactly. It's a nice partnership, because the Justice Centers are part of the state judiciary, and then the Friends are a separate nonprofit. So it's this nice little combination partnership where they work together, like wraparound services for each child.
How do you guys get your funding, and how many of these? I think I already answered how many of them. There's five is what I seem to recall.
There's five centers, two on Hawaii Island, because the island's so big, one on Kauai, one on Maui, and one on Oahu. And those centers, like I said, they're part of the state judiciary. So their salaries and their physical building gets covered under the state. And then the Friends back them up. They're helping raise funds, do fundraisers, get donations. It's a way to gather donations to help make sure the centers are furnished with, you know, comfy, cozy couches and games and toys and books and snacks.
So it's a unique partnership sort of thing, like some other services that are out there, kind of like the Clubhouse program, which is administered by the Department of Mental Health or something, but then has their own independent nonprofit boards that can try to raise funds. So similarly, this is a government agency that is in a unique sort of zone that it can also receive additional funding via the nonprofit, the Friends.
Exactly. Okay. And then the chapter, which I am the chapter coordinator for, I help in a statewide level. So there's each of those Friends that are really working on a local level, and each of those communities is very unique, and they have their own Friends groups. The chapter is best poised to help do activities or events that are better done statewide. So maybe some of the, you know, making sure our message is consistent, doing some prevention activities that's more efficiently done statewide.
Right. I dig it. That makes sense. I mean, some things need to be approached on a larger level.
Yep, exactly.
Than an individual community. If you could speak directly to the folks in the community that could benefit from the services you offer, and that's a wide statement because people can benefit. If you love someone and they're going through something horrific, it hurts. So, you know, that person could benefit by maybe something you're about to say. Obviously, the victims, I'm not expecting kids to be tuned into, you know, what is a program that's essentially more listened to by adults. In terms of people who maybe could be interveners, people who could play a role to stop what's going on or raise attention, or you know best, you do this for work, but I'm just seeding how I want the question answered. In terms of the wide range of people, and you can take your time with it, what would you say to them about reaching out to you and things they could do to try to help?
There are so many things all people can do, all adults can do in our community. So right off the bat, what I'm thinking of, when children experience abuse, what we hear from them is that a big part of the trauma, their mental health trauma, is much more so the reaction they received from others in the community, if I'm explaining that right.
When they said they'd been abused, their reaction got changed.
When they say they've been abused, how the adults in their lives respond. So you can be an adult that chooses to start by believing. We like to say that. You're just going to start by believing. You're going to thank a child for telling them and trusting them. It makes such a huge difference, that initial response that a child might get. So the secrecy of child abuse, physical abuse can thrive in secrecy, but specifically, particularly sexual abuse, thrives in secrecy. And once children kind of find the courage and are able to talk about it, it's a huge relief for them. And that can be the biggest part to the start of their healing. And it depends upon what is an adult's reaction going to be. So support, belief, making sure they get to the appropriate agencies to help figure out what needs to happen next.
Okay.
So that response is hugely important. Another thing that people can do, you know, we can all kind of play a role in prevention. And there are some specific ways, like if you have a child in your life, there are very simple ideas that we can help promote to kids. Things like making sure they understand they are in charge of their body. And a nice way to say that is kind of, you know, you're the boss of your body. Kids kind of get that. So in Hawaii, it gets a little sticky because we're big huggers, we're big kissers. But I think it's very important to emphasize to little children and even teenagers that if they don't want to hug grandpa or kiss uncle goodbye, they don't have to. They can decide, I'll give them a high five, I'll give them fist bump. Mm-hmm. Things like that. So those tiny little steps you can be taking to make sure that kids really get they are the boss of their bodies.
To empower them to have that control.
Exactly.
And to feel that it's okay to exert it.
Exactly.
Essentially.
Because sometimes the messages kids get at school is, you know, just say no and run away, which it's good to tell kids about saying no. But if they don't have that kind of foundation laid of that they are in charge of their own body, it's a little bit unrealistic for them to just automatically, suddenly be able to say no.
Right. You're saying just say no because you're in charge of your body. It's like, so they already know the concept that I'm saying no because I'm in charge. This is me.
Exactly.
I don't really want to do that.
Exactly.
You have to just accept that I don't want to do that.
Yes. And they've grown up with that.
Right.
You know, even like going to see Santa. It kind of breaks my heart, like when I see little kids screaming on Santa's lap and the parents are pushing them up
right there.
I don't know if this is going to be a controversial statement, but that's just a small example of if your child doesn't want to sit on Santa's lap, they should be able to say that they don't want to.
Right. No, those are those are valuable things for people who are listening. And turning to ways that you guys could, and that's sort of turning already, like when, you know, how can we help you? And sometimes people sometimes people aren't really looking for cash for their cause. They're looking to get a message out there in different ways. And sometimes it's a combination of things that they're looking for. So that is clearly one way that you can support what they're doing there at the Children's Justice Centers. In terms of tangible ways that people listening maybe could volunteer, obviously they can't. They can donate to the Friends of the Children's Justice Center would be a way they can do. So I'm laying it out. You'll know best to explain to folks what you would like. But in the broad way that this community can help you, and it's a statewide audience, lots of folks who have been blessed to have many things in their lives. So what is it that you could use? Space, the board, some skills. Is something broken at the office? You need a new computer. You need a vehicle. The floor is yours.
Well, the first thing to my mind is the money. You know, like you said, if folks want to support their local CJC, they can always reach out to their local friends group. As far as kind of a more statewide effort, the chapter itself is a nonprofit 501c3, so we can always accept donations as well that would be put to kind of those statewide awareness and prevention efforts.
So people can donate right to the Children's Justice Centers or to the Friends of the Children's Justice Centers. You're both equipped and capable of taking the donations.
They can donate to the chapter or to the Friends.
Okay.
Yes, exactly. And I think that I'm gonna tag along a little bit to what I said previously as well, that being able to be, to talk about it, to be a person that a child can come to helps a great deal. So I have this quote that I love from Mr. Rogers, and he at one point said, if it's mentionable, it's manageable. So there's a lot of shame and stigma around child abuse that translates, the child picks up on that, and they don't need to be the one to feel shame and stigma. There's only, in my mind, there's one person who needs to feel shame and stigma, the offender.
The perpetrator. Right?
Yeah, that's right. So to be able to help erase that shame and stigma, it's going to take talking about it and supporting children. Children are extremely resilient. I want people to know that too. I think all humans are. But it's that response that we get that's going to help build our resilience. There's a lot of trauma actually that happens in this world, unfortunately. To take kind of an extreme example, I mean, there's kind of the Boston Marathon bombing. There's traumatic events like that that happen in our own country. And think about the response, the community response that those children who witnessed that bombing received. They're helping throw out the first pitch at Fenway Park. They're helping to sing the national anthem. You know, people are gathering around. And I don't know if we need to have child abuse survivors throw out the first pitch, but if we can think about how are we able to support a child's resiliency and their strength, celebrate, you told that secret. You know, make that like a celebration. That you're so brave for talking about it.
Yeah, I mean, because it's the flip side is this stuff when you talk about life is a journey with so many traumatic, and we all go through such different experiences. You know, a kid growing up in Syria right now in some town is going through something that me and you can't even imagine. And so many people are, his parent, and while we are resilient, and we are, I mean, you can adapt and move to all these different climates and go through stuff like that, or war, or horrific imprisonments. And the flip side is it's also, we are more fragile than we give ourselves, you know, than we want to believe. And sometimes hard events can reshape you forever. They can sometimes bring out the best of you, too, because, you know, even if you're unhappy, you're going to be determined to try to do something right. But being a victim of something like that at a young age where you've lost your trust in people who are you supposed to trust, who are adults, I get what you mean. I mean, it can have very long-term ramifications in terms of trying to get through that. And so I think you have a really good point about trying to provide a sort of wraparound service of comfort and making them believe you can trust people again, and what you did is a heroic thing. It takes a lot. It's kind of like a woman who's being beaten to make that step. I'm going to get out of this. This is not going to be easy. I'm going to call the Domestic Violence Action Center. It's not going to be just, oh, okay, everything's done. It could, you know, so it's the same thing, I guess, is what you're saying with kids, is that to try to give them a to be aware that what they're going through could have really strong long-term ramifications, and to give them, I love those examples with the what you're saying, what we do for these people who were traumatized. So you're pitching for more of that kind of sentiment to be given to survivors and victims of this.
Yes, exactly. Yep, for people being willing to talk about it, speak up if you have a concern. Be on the side of the child.
Right.
I mean, neutrality, maintaining neutrality only supports a perpetrator.
Right. No, I mean, no question.
Yeah,
because then you're not, if you're not on their side,
yeah.
We believe, yeah, well, that's the thing about these things. This is very serious stuff.
Mm.
So what are, okay, so there's some, so what else, you, so we can give, we've learned, we can donate right to the chapter, we can donate to the Friends of the Children's Justice Centers. So making cash donations, I'm reading, is a very important thing to help
yes.
the mission, because
yes.
a lot of this does come down to legal professionals, medical professionals, law enforcement professionals. In addition to that, are there any volunteer opportunities? Are there anything, is there anything at your office you guys could use? You've also created a lot of public awareness, how you think people should think. And, mm-hmm. and I'm also hearing you want people, don't hesitate, make that first call.
Mm-hmm.
Are you guys a source? So I'm asking if people are listening, well, I think this kid's getting abused. I'm not mm-hmm. sure. I'd like to talk to somebody who will talk me through what I'm seeing and ask me some questions. Are you guys people they should call? Or?
You know, not necessarily the chapter. I would really encourage people to call the Department of Human Services. So those are the experts in child protection.
Not police.
They can also call police as well.
Is that also appropriate? Is that equally appropriate?
Equally appropriate.
And are they equipped to then transfer the call to another? So really,
yes.
you call 911. I mean, you tell me if I got it wrong here. But so the bottom line is, somebody needs to talk about that kind of thing. Should they feel good, they can call 911. I think I know about a child abuse situation. Who do I talk to that's a professional? And 911 should be able to get you to either the cops or whomever.
They should. I mean, we always say, of course, if it's an emergent situation, a child is currently being harmed, you want to call 911. The 911 operator is not really going to be able to problem solve and, mm-hmm. and talk it through with you. Hopefully, they can get you then to the child welfare department that is appropriate for your community. Excuse me. So if you can find the reporting line for the Department of Human Services, I would say start there unless it's an active emergency. But, you know, all else fails, you can't remember the numbers, you can't find it online, just call 911.
Okay.
They will help you.
And for calling you guys, what other stuff do you want people to reach out to you who are listening? What are, besides donating to you guys mm-hmm. to support what you're doing, or is there any concerns if people have that they should reach out to you with?
You know, I like that you mentioned volunteers. So each of the five friends will always appreciate volunteers. They're holding different events. They're holding, you know, different activities and things like that. So it's a nice way to be able to volunteer in your local community. And if they call the chapter, people out there in radio world, call the chapter's number, and I can connect you with your local friends group.
Yeah, that's the cool thing about what we've got here today on the program, because this is like the mothership of the whole thing. Because as chapter coordinator for the Hawaii State Chapter, then you can basically, anywhere in the state, anyone wants to help out this organization, not sure about which one is their local one, they can give you the contact information I have, they can contact you, and Carrie can put you on that path towards the one that's nearest to where you are.
Yep, exactly.
Okay. Let me give the information. It is an interesting website. Again, I'll have all this at hawaiipublicradio.org, so no worries grabbing it at this moment, but it's histatechaptercjcs.org. And that's histatechaptercjcs.org. Their phone number is 343-5160. Their email is hsccjc@gmail.com.
Yes.
Best of all, though, yes, it's a long one.
It's a little
one.
Bit of a crazy
it
email.
It happens. But the important thing is to make it all easier is you can go to hawaiipublicradio.org and you'll find all of our Helping Hand segments archived online, and you'll just very easily be able to find Children's Justice Center, and they'll have all the contact information that I was just mentioning. It'll be waiting there for you. What other things are important that we didn't cover that you'd like to get out there?
You know, I would like to make sure that people know when there is a child abuse allegation and a child is able to come to one of the CJCs, the centers, a lot of people are very hesitant, like, oh, they're going to be interrogated or maybe something scary is going to happen to them. But I do want to reassure that the type of interview, and I kind of have air quotes about interviews, because it's not like an official police interrogation or something like that. It's a very comfortable conversation that a person who's specifically trained in how to talk to kids would have with a child. A child is never pushed beyond, you know, what they're willing or able to talk about at the time. The highest priority is the needs of the child in that moment. Not even the investigation necessarily. We're not going to re-traumatize a child in our quest to find out, you know, what happened. So I think it's good to know that. And that also those other services, the mental health, the medical, can be extremely helpful for a child's recovery. Even medical treatment for a child's emotional recovery. Just hearing from a specialist tell a child, you're normal. You know, for a child to hear, you're normal, they can feel so excited about that. I'm normal, you know, because they think that they're somehow damaged or changed, right, or people can tell.
Yeah, well, you're talking about, like, if you're the person you're supposed to trust the most in your life, either one of your parents or one of your siblings or another really close relative is involved in this, that is that can be extraordinarily damaging for one's self-esteem and your sense of trust. So what you're saying makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. And I dig it. What you're saying is the approach is their well-being first.
Yes.
And it's not so much to try to suss out the victim or the perpetrator that comes as part of it. But it's really, first and foremost, you're saying these interview situations are to try to get that, figure out what can we do to get this kid as comfortable and as safe as possible.
Exactly. You got it. Yep.
Well, it's heavy work. And just mm-hmm. a reminder, you know, the myriad of ways this life can be something else. You know, you got to be grateful that things like this don't happen to you. Chapter coordinator for the Hawaii State Chapter of Children's Justice Centers, Carrie Ock, like Bach, and really admire what you're doing. Thank you for doing it. Thank you for looking out for all these vulnerable children. And don't be a stranger. If there's ever something that you think you want to come back on, I'll reach out to you anyway after a while just to get you further residual exposure on Helping Hand. But don't hesitate to get in touch. I admire what you're doing. I wish you a whole lot of luck.
Thank you so much, Dave.